For the most part, yeah. I've always been like interested in computers. I believe my like first videos on the internet were me trying to like break open a phone and explain what was going on in it.
That is Jeremiah Peoples, a senior developer advocate for Slack over here at Salesforce. I'm Josh Burke, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast. And here on the podcast, you'll hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we sit down and talk with Jeremiah about the next generation of Slack development, how developers can interact with it. But we are going to continue on, as we often do, with his earlier.
Earliest memory of a computer, I believe it's like around the RuneScape era. I mean, there's obviously stuff before it, but the RuneScape was like one of the most like interesting parts about the internet for me. I'm like, I can talk to other people around the world and I can do stuff online with them. Wow.
Right. What I love as a gamer myself is like 7 times out of 10 when I ask that question, the answer is in the form of a video game. Yeah. It's just that moment of time that we're like, oh, this is what I'm going to spend a lot of time with.
Absolutely.
Out of curiosity, how did joining the Air Force impact your career?
That's an interesting question. So I didn't join the Air Force with a computery job. I was an intelligence analyst to start. But about halfway through my 6-year enlistment, I'm like, I don't really want to do this for the next 20 years. So I need to figure out something else I want to do. That's when I started teaching myself how to code. And alongside that, I started to document the journey. And that's how the transition to developer advocacy came about.
Got it. I just have to ask, an intelligence analyst, does that mean you were a spy?
So next question, Josh.
Best answer ever. And I think this is actually now blending. What was it like being a freelance YouTuber?
Amazing, actually. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. I believe I started in COVID, so I was just trying to, you know, express myself in a time where we couldn't go outside. But I just had some amazing opportunities come to fruition because of YouTube, like the best being this job, because it's essentially what I did on YouTube, but now I get to do it full time.
That's awesome. When did you first start getting involved with Slack?
I just hit my 1-year mark about a month ago. So I'm still pretty fresh in the company.
Nice. Were you involved with Slack development before you joined Slack, or was it you took your skills and approached Slack that way?
The second option. Yeah, I had no experience building on top of Slack, but once I onboarded, then I learned all the things and now I can teach all the things, which is probably like the main thing a developer advocate needs to do.
I love it. So riffing off of that, how would you describe your current job?
It's a fun one, that's for sure. Yeah. The thing about developer advocacy is it's just really hard to explain it. But I have, I think, 3 pillars of my job. One is the public speaking portion, to where events occur outside in the world, like Dreamforce and Trailblazer DX, and I get to do keynotes and talk to audiences there. So that is one of the 2 pillars. My favorite pillar is the content creation aspect, where I get to make YouTube videos, internal videos, and just a lot of videos and documentation about what the next generation of Slack platform offers. And then the last pillar of developer advocacy that I do is internal or external workshops with companies.
Gotcha. Yeah, I sympathize. I had the title developer evangelist. And when I first told my dad about my new job, he thought for about 3 months that I was writing religious software. So
yeah. I get that a lot as well. When people say evangelism, my parents were like, so you're preaching Slack? Not quite.
Yeah. I fought the trend to go from evangelist to advocacy for like a long time. And then I'm like, no, this is a good trend. I think it's easier to say that I advocate for this platform as opposed to I evangelize for it. So I hear
you. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that we have a similar background and experience so we can, you know, we're synced up.
Yes. And yes, most of the people I know find it very difficult to describe my job. So very much appreciate. Now, a lot of people think of Slack as a collaboration tool. And I think I've had a similar issue with this with Salesforce, because sometimes my job, the first thing to do is tell them that it's actually a platform as well that you can build applications on. When people approach you and you're like, no, Slack's also a development platform, like, how do you describe it as a development platform?
First, like, want to get an understanding of what they know about Slack, because I feel like a lot of the people that I meet at conferences that are unfamiliar with the Slack platform, like, yeah, it's a great place for communication. And that's fantastic. If that's what you're using Slack for, that's great. But the Slack platform is the cherry on the top that makes it really amazing. So I think a lot of people in Slack say that Slack is the 2% of your like software that makes the other 98% more efficient to use. Nice. But to have that 2% be the thing that enables the other 98%, you need applications and automations. And that is essentially the Slack platform. the automations, the things that make it really efficient.
Did you, when you were, you know, you're learning Slack specifically and things like that, did you have like a, like an aha moment where you're like, oh yeah, no, this is the jam.
Could you explain more about the aha moment?
Did you have, so I'll tell you what, I'll flip it over. All right. For me, my aha moment with Salesforce was when I realized that, so I have a, you know, wide variety of history with development, blah, 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 blah. One of the things I have always been terrible at is database design. I once created a PHP application for my family. And one time my brother was like, hey, can we like delete all of the data from like everything from the last year since we're not using it anymore? I'm like, sure, of course, it's a database. That's easy. Unless, of course, like me, you forget to do things like add a created date field. So my aha moment was in Salesforce, like you can't do that, right? Like you create a custom object and instantly they force you to have like good database design. And I'm like, aha, like this is a development platform that I can get behind.
Got it. Yeah. I had two aha moments. One was the aha moment of like someone who's using Slack to get their job done. So when I first onboarded, I was like, oh, all of these little workflows and applications, I'm going to use them because it helps me. And then I realized, oh, wow, I don't have to go to Google Drive to give you access. I don't have to go to Zoom to join the meeting. I can join and do all of these things from one place, which saves so much on context switching.
Right. I love it. I love it. Was there a second one?
There was a second one. On the second one, it was using the like the new features that have come out in like the last year of, for the developer experience of, wow, not only are these applications really powerful, but I can now spin up an application in just like 3 minutes and get started and deploy it. And that is like super amazing because when I first onboarded, I started building applications a traditional way just to test it out. And it was great, but it took a bit of time to do. And it took a bit of configuration and time to set up before I got that hello world. But with the new like features, the new developer experience tools, that is a lot quicker.
So I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because I had that one down the list, but let's dig into that a little bit. Like, tell me what the new developer, well, actually let's start with what was the old, what was the traditional developer experience with Slack? How did I ratchet up an application?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the traditional way of building Slack applications is a good process, and many of the applications that we all use today were built the traditional way. And we have a couple frameworks that support JavaScript, Python, and Java, and with those you can create an application. However, there was some problems that we were hearing from our developers saying that permissions and scopes and credentials and tokens, and it was a bit hard to configure and manage. And not only that, they were very monolithic. So you would build an entire application, there'd be some great logic within it, but it wasn't really able to be reused or repurposed. So with all of those learnings, we kind of built the next generation Slack platform to be one that is modular and reusable and flexible.
Got it. So prior to the new tools, it was sort of an application in a jar sort of thing. Like, and then other platforms, I think, do this where it's like, oh yeah, that's a Node application. We're going to create a little hole to it, but it's just running in a folder somewhere. Now it sounds like it's more like I could create a portion of an application and share that with you in your application so that you would not have to reuse that, or you would not have to rebuild that.
Absolutely. Yeah. The application in jar was a great way of putting the traditional applications. Jars are very useful. I've used jars before in my personal life.
Right.
I love jars. But there's something about like building blocks that I can now create a Taj Mahal of an application without having to build all the blocks myself.
Right. What's the developer experience itself like? Like if I'm sitting down in VS Code and I have my Slack workspace, what's my starting point there?
So the new starting point now starts with the Slack CLI. Are you talking about the new starting point or the
traditional way? Yeah, the new starting point, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, the new starting point is the Slack CLI. That's kind of the command station of how you can get, you can manage your applications, you can deploy them, run them locally. So yeah, it starts with the Slack CLI.
Okay. And so once I've jumped into the Slack CLI, you were saying you can do things in minutes. So like you gives me that access to that Hello World application, basically.
Absolutely. And even better than that. So a lot of times the application that you want to create is very similar to an application that's already been created. So if you don't want to create an application from scratch, you can actually say Slack create and then pass in an argument to a a GitHub repo, and it will clone that repo down to your local machine, and you can just tweak it and adjust it as needed. And we do have like about 20 samples that you can get started with and tweak to your liking as it stands right now.
Got it. Nice. Can you walk me through like the working layers of a Slack application and kind of tell me a little bit about how they actually function?
Now, Josh, I would love to. So once again, you can like create your app with Slack Create, and that's going to, you know, build the files that you need. And essentially, there's three main pillars of a modular application, and that's the function, the workflow, and the triggers.
Okay.
So for the functions, these are anything that like they're atomic bits of functionality, and there's two types of them. The first type is Slack built functions, which make it really easy to do Slack native commands like send a message, send a DM, invite a user to a user group. So that's one type of function. The other type of function is custom functions, which as you probably could imagine, you can make custom functions.
Gotcha.
So once you have your function that you want, you can assign them in logical order and stack them, and you can wrap them in what we're calling workflows.
Okay.
Pretty simple, just a wrapper to your functions. And then at the very end, once you have a workflow full of functions, you can pick how the workflow is triggered.
Got it. So what are some of the different ways you can trigger a workflow?
So right now, I believe we have four, and the four different trigger types are event triggers. So when someone joins a channel, you can launch a workflow. The second one after that is a shortcut trigger. And this one is actually pretty cool. It's my favorite one to use because it's so easy for local development and sharing. You can essentially generate a link that ties to your workflow. So many people pass links within Slack. So you can pass this shortcut trigger, and it's essentially your application. So it will unfurl into a card, and the end user can then use your application from there.
Got it. And you've got
after that,
two
we
more.
Have webhooks. Yes, sir. After that, we have webhooks. So this is when like an external piece of information outside of Slack changes, like someone stars a GitHub repo that could kick off your workflow. And the last one is scheduled, which as you probably can imagine, Josh, you can set a time in the future for your workflow to run.
Got it. Got to love a good old-fashioned cron job. Like it.
Love that.
Yeah. So you mentioned there for a second, like a card. Tell me a little bit about what BlockKit is and how does that help in like user interface design?
Gotcha. So BlockKit is our tool that we use to build a surface. And the surface is synonymous with a modal or a pop-up or something that you can see. So with BlockKit, you can build a surface or something that you can see with JSON. And that JSON, if you format it correctly, it will appear as a pre-designed portion of an application. This takes away the burden of a developer having to worry about how something appears, and it puts it on BlockKit. So a super formatted way to build and have your application represented.
Got it. Walk me through a little bit of the modularity about what we've been talking about so far. So for instance, you're putting your functions, wrapping them in a workflow, you're exposing them through triggers, you're creating surfaces that are going to represent, you know, user interface design. If I'm building something that's similar to that, how do I access the portions that you've already built?
Glad you asked. Yeah. So in the very near future, we have the next version of Workflow Builder coming out. And Workflow Builder is our no-code tool to where you can build a workflow without code by dragging and dropping. And right now, you can do that with very simple steps, like when someone joins the channel, you can write them a message. However, developers and builders will be able to collaborate in the future. So when a developer writes a fantastic piece of code that accomplishes a task that many people will need, that developer can deploy it to Slack managed infrastructure, and it will show up as a step for builders so they can drag in that very complex piece of functionality without writing any additional code themselves.
Got it. I like it. And don't worry, this is actually, I think, the second time I've made this joke in recent history. I like to say that, you know, every now and then when you're listening to an interview, you can hear when somebody's using air quotes. My audience is very used to hearing the asterisks after a statement. In the near future. When you say near future, what's available now and what's it looking like in the near future? Like what kind of time frame are you thinking?
Well, near future is actually super near.
Okay.
So all the developer tools are GA. They went GA earlier this year in 2023. And the next generation of the Workflow Builder, that will be GA in just a few weeks, actually, summer of 23.
Got it. What kind of development skills are required to build on Slack?
So we have a wide range of ways that you can start building automations. As I mentioned before, even if you don't have the technical background, you can still build very valuable workflows using our no-code builder, our workflow builder. So that is how you can get started, even if you have no programming or coding experiences at all. But if you do have coding experiences, we offer a wide variety of ways to get started. Our next generation platform currently only supports the Dino runtime environment as well as TypeScript. So if you know those two languages and that runtime environment, you're in a good start. But if you want to build traditionally, we also offer frameworks for Java, Python, and JavaScript.
Got it. So the old ways aren't necessarily going away. You can still build it that way, but you're just not going to get some of the niceties like being part of the workflow builder that's coming up.
I believe the future is the next generation way. Mm-hmm. So we are still trying to support all the applications that have come before, but I don't want to speak for the whole entire company, but I believe we're moving forward with the direction of the next generation Slack platform and Nellis tools.
And once again, always the fine line a developer advocate has to walk.
Yes, for sure.
I love it. Give me some of your, and you can make it, you know, specific or generic or anything like that, but give me some of your favorite examples of applications that you've seen built.
I like the applications that bring people together in a way that's meaningful, and I'll explain what I mean by that. Okay. So one of the things that I like about Slack I mentioned before is that you don't have to monitor five different applications on your desktop all at once. You can do all of that from one spot. And you can go even further by having automations, and you can go even further than that by having them tied to webhooks. So let's say you have a issue occur in Jira or GitHub that can automatically kick off a workflow that invites everyone to a shared channel and educates them on the problem and then points people in the right direction so that they can mitigate that problem quickly.
That brings up an interesting example because it kind of twists the next question I was going to have. Well, actually, let's level set for everybody just so that they know we're using the right nouns. What is a webhook and how does it work?
Yeah, a webhook essentially listens to something that is occurring outside of Slack. So you can set up a webhook to integrate with an application that supports it, and you're waiting for some event to occur before you do X, Y, and Z.
So it's instead of like an outward API call, I go to GitHub, I set up a webhook based on certain parameters, and then back in Slack, I can just go basically say, listen to this URL and react when it changes.
Essentially. Yeah, that's right.
Are there other modes of integration with other, like you mentioned, there's Google Drive integration and there's all these kind of things. Is webhook the main system or are there other options?
There are other options. So webhook is a type of triggers, as I mentioned, the four other ones, scheduled, link trigger, webhook triggers, and then event triggers. But under the hood, they're all essentially using the same set of Slack's open APIs to accomplish a task. How you trigger them, you can pick from one of our trigger types, but for the most part, they're using Slack open APIs to accomplish the task that is needed.
Got it. So webhooks is sort of one way to jump ahead, but if you've got the good old-fashioned REST API that you want to integrate with, that's totally an option as well.
Right.
Got it. Very cool. Not the near future. Is there anything on the longer roadmap that you'd like to give a shout out to?
So it's been highly requested, but Workflow Builder, not this next version of it, but a version in the future, will have some conditional logic. It's definitely being planned for and worked towards, but conditional logic and Workflow Builder will be a game changer because a lot of our audience, our community, is actually building Workflow Builder workflows. So enabling them to have more tools at their disposal will just be a greater contribution to the ecosystem of apps in Slack.
Got it. Love it. Let's say I'm a developer. I know TypeScript. I'm curious about this, but woe is me, I'm not even a Slack user. How do I get started?
So if you want to get started building and you know TypeScript and you know Dino, you are in a really good position to head over to our documentation and check out a few of the samples that we have already created because you don't really need to recreate the wheel if you don't have to. So oftentimes it's a lot easier to see a sample, get a great idea, and then tweak it to your liking.
Got it. Jeremiah, I'm going to show my ignorance here. What is Dino?
So I know you're familiar with Node. Is that correct?
Correct.
So Node was built by this amazing person named Ryan Dahl, I believe.
That sounds right.
He built
that
in 2009. Mm-hmm. But a couple years later, about a decade later in 2018, he was like, I wish I would have built it a bit more secure with some modern web APIs and kind of in the headache of module management. And so he did. and he shuffled up the letters, and now he's calling it Dino. And at Slack, we're early adopters of the Dino runtime environment.
And that's our show. And before we go, I did ask after Jeremiah's favorite non-technical hobby. And well, it's one that's sometimes a little hard to access here in the Midwest.
Favorite non-technical hobby. I mean, I like content creation, but I don't think that counts. So outside of that, I'd say ultimate Frisbee and snowboarding. I live to play ultimate Frisbee and snowboard.
That is awesome. Where do you get to snowboard?
So I'm chasing mountains. Really? I go to a new mountain every year. And I believe this year we're going to a mountain in Washington.
I want to thank Jeremiah for the great conversation and information. And as always, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you want to learn more about this show, head on over to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear old episodes, see the show notes, and have links to your favorite podcast service. Thanks again, everybody, and I'll talk to you next week.